When you have a privatization of public space, you also tend to have privatization of security.
What I've been usually looking at is rules that people hold up by behavior rather than rules that are written in the law.
How do I work as a designer with this translation from material that's documented into a book that is an abstraction of it?
Willkommen bei Nicht nur schön, dem Bücherpodcast, der beim Inhalt anfängt und bei der Gestaltung endet.
Mein Name ist Laura Breitschmidt.
Und ich bin Jonas Wanderer.
Hallo Laura, wie üblich sprechen wir in dieser Episode über eines der schönsten Schweizer Bücher aus dem Jahr 2022. Wir schauen etwas genauer auf den Inhalt, aber auch auf die Gestaltung und die Wechselwirkung zwischen diesen beiden Aspekten des Büchermachens. Heute bist du dran und ich lehne mich gerne zurück und lausche deinen Beschreibungen.
Hallo Jonas. Genau, ich habe ein Buch mitgebracht und zwar, würde ich sagen, ein typisches Kuratorinnenbuch. Ich musste etwas lange suchen, habe es dann antiquarisch aber gefunden. Das Buch in meinen Händen ist etwas größer als A4, vor allem etwas breiter. Es ist ungefähr 1,5 cm dick und es ist ein Softcover, matt gestrichenes Papier. Öffne ich das Buch, ist der Buchblock nur an der Rückseite mit dem Cover verklebt. Es ist eine Schweizer Broschüre, sprich man sieht den offenen Buchrücken und auch die Fadenbindung. Der Buchblock ist an 3 Kanten geschnitten. Wenn ich dann durchblättere, dann ist das Inhaltspapier aus weißem ungestrichenem Papier. Es ist eher voluminös und jede Seite enthält entweder Bild oder Text. Die Bildseiten umfassen Dokumente und Fotografien. Die Fotografien sind zum Teil doppelseitig, randabfallend gezeigt, teilweise verschwommen. Es gibt aber auch kleinere Bilder, schwarz-weiß und farbig. Dazwischen sind grau eingefärbte Seiten, welche eine Rhythmisierung geben oder als Kapiteltrenner funktionieren. Schließe ich das Buch wieder, lese ich auf der Rückseite einen kurzen Klappentext und drehe ich das Buch wieder um, bin ich auf dem Cover. Das Cover ist vollflächig mit einem fotografischen Bild bedruckt. Dieses zeigt einen Personalausweis. Weil man recht nahe herangezoomt hat, sieht man auf der linken Seite angeschnitten einen großen Daumen. Auf dem Personalausweis ist ein Passfoto zu sehen der Inhaberin, sowie auch der Name Johanna Takala und rechts das Logo der international tätigen Sicherheitsfirma Securitas. Über dieses Foto ist ein weiteres Logo gedruckt, und zwar das Logo der alle 2 Jahre stattfindenden internationalen Kunstausstellung Biennale Venedig. Und zwar ist es das Logo der 59. Ausgabe von 2022. Den Titel habe ich jetzt noch nicht gesagt, der steht nämlich auf dem Buchrücken. Da lese ich Pilvi Takala, Close Watch. Close Watch war der Beitrag der finnischen Künstlerin Pilvi Takala für den ebenfalls finnischen Pavillon an der Kunstbiennale 2022 in Venedig. Die Publikation ist von der Schweizer Grafikerin Vela Arbutina gestaltet, von Christina Lee herausgegeben und erschien bei Muss Publishing. Und weil die Publikation nicht nur anlässlich der Biennale herausgegeben wurde, sondern auch wirklich Teil der Arbeit war, würde ich ganz kurz in Pilvi Taklas künstlerisches Schaffen eintauchen. In ihrer Kunst geht es um Konventionen und Codes, die unsere täglichen Interaktionen bestimmen. Sie untersucht die sozialen Normen des Zusammenlebens von unterschiedlichen gesellschaftlichen Gruppen, indem sie diese subtilen Störungen aussetzt. Das Ganze klingt komplizierter, als es ist. Es sind nämlich ganz einfache Handlungen, die sie vollzieht. Dazu gehören aber jeweils umfangreiche Recherchen, wie wir nachher hören werden. Und das Werk, welches das Publikum dann auch schlussendlich sieht, sind in der Regel Videoarbeiten, welche aber einen immersiven Charakter haben, das heißt, der Raum, in dem sich das Publikum befindet, ist so gestaltet, dass das Publikum hineingezogen wird. Nun zu Close Watch, der Arbeit im gleichnamigen Buch. Pilvi Takala ließ sich dafür bei der privaten Sicherheitsfirma Securitas anstellen und arbeitete während rund 6 Monaten für diese. Die Arbeit führte sie im größten Einkaufszentrum Finnlands aus. Und durch die Erfahrungen in der täglichen Arbeit befragt sie eben diese sozialen Strukturen. Es geht um Social Profiling, um Zugehörigkeit, Gruppendynamiken, Macht und aber auch Hierarchien. Die Arbeit als Securitas hat sie eben in einem Einkaufszentrum ausgeführt. Und Jonas, ich weiß nicht, gehst du manchmal in Einkaufszentren?
Es kommt sehr selten vor, aber eigentlich eher weniger.
Ich auch nicht. Das hat wahrscheinlich auch einen guten Grund. In der Schweiz sind es einfach Konsumorte oder Unterhaltungsorte. In Finnland haben Einkaufszentren auch eine andere Funktion. Deshalb ist es auch kein Zufall, dass Pilvi-Takkala sich dort hat anstellen lassen. Weil das Wetter in Finnland ein bisschen harscher ist als bei uns und es ist auch länger dunkel, finden in Malls eben auch andere Sachen statt. Zum Beispiel sind dort teilweise öffentliche Dienstleistungen untergebracht, wie zum Beispiel Bibliotheken. Nun zurück zur Publikation auf dem Tisch vor uns. Darin ist eben nicht die Ausstellung dokumentiert, sondern es ist Material aus dem Arbeitsprozess.
Ja, und genau diese Ausstellung konnten wir ja zum Glück besuchen. Vor ein paar Wochen waren wir im Migros-Museum für Gegenwartskunst in Zürich. Und da wurde eben die Installation Close Watch gezeigt. Und diese bestand grob aus zwei Teilen. Als erstes standen wir vor einer Art überdimensionalem Smartphone, etwa 2,5 Meter hoch. Und darauf konnten wir einen Chatverlauf lesen. Es war ein Gespräch zwischen der Künstlerin Pilvi-Takkala, ihren Mitarbeiterinnen der Securitas, aber auch mit ihren Vorgesetzten. Es gab mehrere dieser Screens und mehrere Gespräche und dann im zweiten Teil, im hinteren Teil des Ausstellungsraumes, war ein abgetrennter Raum mit Wänden aus verspiegeltem Glas und wenn man da reingegangen ist, war es ziemlich dunkel. Es standen so Bürosessel rum und man hat sich da reingesetzt, um die Videoinstallation anzuschauen. Auf den beiden Bildschirmen waren Szenen aus einem Workshop zu sehen, die die Künstlerin mit ehemaligen Arbeitskollegen der Securitas durchgeführt hat. Sie spielen dort Szenen aus dem Arbeitsalltag nach, reflektieren gewisse Abläufe und tauschen sich über diese Erfahrungen aus. Und eben in diesem Sessel zu sitzen und da zuzuschauen, fand ich recht seltsam, weil es etwas Voyeuristisches hat. Ich hatte das Gefühl, in einer Art Kontrollzentrale der Securitas zu sitzen und die Menschen auf den Bildschirmen zu überwachen. Und so wurde man eigentlich selbst auch Teil dieses ganzen Konstrukts.
Und am gleichen Tag, als wir die Ausstellung besuchen gingen, fand ja auch noch eine Panel-Discussion statt, an der wir dann auch gleich teilgenommen haben, als Gäste natürlich, also im Publikum, nicht auf der Bühne. Auf der Bühne saßen nämlich andere Personen und wir möchten euch einige Zitate abspielen. Zuerst hören wir Richard Wolf, er ist Stadtsoziologe und ehemaliger Zürcher Stadtrat und war auch Vorsteher der Polizei. Und sein Blick auf die Institution Polizei ist sehr interessant, auch im Kontext von Close Watch.
The police is an instrument of the state, of the government. And in principle, you have, depending on the type of state, for example, if you have a dictatorship or you have an autocratic rule, you will have a different kind of police than in a country like in Europe, most countries, where you have democracies that clearly give the power to the police, but they also check and control what the police do. This is not to say that the police people always do the right thing. There is mistakes and there are things that are not good in the police, but it is a matter of politics, of the courts, of the justice system, of the public, of the media, to set borders and to demand improvements. The people decide what they want from the police, and if they're not happy, there will be complaints, there will be court cases, there will be reforms. So this is from a political point of view, from a constitutional point of view, what the police does, it is supposed to help. And if that is not happening, then you should have the right to demand that they do their job properly. When you have a privatization of public space, you also tend to have privatization of security. So a lot of private actors jump into the field. It is, I think, an achievement of the modern societies that the state holds the monopoly of power. We have one body, we have the state, and the state employs not only police, but also social workers and all kinds of people that in the name of the state try to keep a way of living together which is good and safe for all. When you privatize space, for example, in a shopping mall, because the shopping mall for us as consumers seems to be public space, because we go to a shopping mall like we go to the old part of the city and we visit different shops. But the difference is in the city center, the space in the middle between the shops is public and is controlled by the state police. When you go to the shopping center, even if you go to the Shopville underneath the station in Zurich, it's not public space anymore. You have private agents that set the rules. You should not sit down on the floor. So there's all sorts of different regulations when you have private space than when you have public space.
Und die zweite Stimme aus der Panel Discussion, die wir einspielen möchten, ist Simin Javabre. Sie absolviert an der FU Berlin ihren Master in Politikwissenschaft und ist in antirassistischen und kommunistischen Bewegungen aktiv. Sie beschäftigt sich mit Kapitalismus, Kolonialismus und Polizeigewalt und sie gab eine sehr spannende Einordnung der Geschichte der Polizei und Machtstruktur.
The police is really something like a new phenomenon. So it's not that it always existed and it's even a quite young thing. It has a lot to do with the overcoming feudalism, but also with the fact that little territorial states became one expensive nation state and with the development of our present economic system, so capitalism. So we can imagine that in the system before, like in feudalism, it was more that the rank ordered the social hierarchies and the system. And with the fall of it, the society needed something like new means to order. And in that period, the police has its origin. So it's really important to see making of the police wasn't to protect people in the first place, but to protect the systemic conditions. And that was in a period where a rising class used every form of violence to restore and to decline the incoming of the former ruling groups. And by that, I mean that, for example, a lot of land from peasants was burned down, their villages were burned down, they were brutally expropriated, for example, and displaced. And in that area, the role of the police was to do exactly those expropriations and to put, so to say, the people in a new role. And the new role was now that the people had to sell their work because they didn't have any access anymore to the land. And within that period, we have the first forms of wage labor, actually, like we know it today. And this was the role of the police, to make that function and to discipline the people into wage labor. The first time we had those policing logics and categories, it was actually in the colonies. In the colonies where people had to work, but without political rights. So by that, I mean the enslavement of people. And this is where the policing logics came from and then came into the colonial metropolis to initiate wage labor also. And so we can see in the history of the police that from the beginning, actually, it had kind of two-folded characters that for one part of the society, it meant economic force, but with political rights. And for another part of the society, it meant economic force and political force. And that two-folded character we can see actually until today. For example, you, Richard, said we call them so that they can help. This means we have a field where we have reactive policing, right? But then we also have proactive policing. And proactive policing means that the police is in, for example, poorer areas, but also migrant areas. And there the police controls without the people there having the political right to not being controlled or to not be displaced like in other areas. You, Richard, also said that depending on the political system, the institution is kind of a tool for that. But I would also say, looking to the history, we actually see really clear that it's more like a protection of the economic system than the political system. I think it's important to see that we don't just have a problem with suspicionless controls. Like in Germany, we say verdachtsunabhängige Kontrolle when we speak about profiling. So the problem is not going to a black person and say, I think maybe you don't have papers. And then it turns out, no, it's a person living in Germany with German papers, actually. But the problem is also that the police has the job to control the papers, right? And that we live in the system where your worth is depending on the paper you have. And for that, it's really important to see, I would say, that all these things like criminality or guilt and being unguilty are really categories to kind of uphold the system.
Diese beiden Zitate sind nur kurze Ausschnitte aus einem über einstündigen Gespräch. Es lohnt sich, das Ganze anzuhören. In unseren Shownotes findet ihr wie immer den Link dazu. Und eine Woche nach dem Gespräch konnten wir mit Pilvi Takla, der Künstlerin, und auch mit Vela Arbutina, der Gestalterin, über das Buch sprechen.
Pilvi Takla, you're in Berlin at the moment in your studio. Last week we met in Zurich at Mikromuseum für Gegenwartskunst during a panel discussion. Vela Arbutina, you're in Basel right now. Jonas and me, we cover Lucerne and Zurich, so we're all over the places. Pilvi Takla, first, to get a better understanding of the publication, it's important to also understand how you work as an artist. Your artistic practice is sometimes called performative intervention. You often do investigate on topics in the context of social structures. And social structures, maybe to have a common understanding of it, could be described as institutional constructs which define how human beings live together in a society. So there are like the rules or the constructions we live in. One particular character of social structures is that they also represent structures of power. And in Close Watch, you address the topic of security, in German maybe to be described as Sicherheit. So Finland and Switzerland, they have institutions which are in charge of the security. On one hand, it's a state police, but also private security companies. And you started to work as a security guard in Finland. Could you tell us something about the motivation to dive into this community and this particular place?
Yeah, so I'll just say shortly about, in general, like social structures. What I've been usually looking at is rules that people hold up by behavior rather than like rules that are written in the law or in the house rules or something like this. And I've been kind of challenging these things, but we uphold by these structures like police, security, other institutions. What I was really interested in, especially with the security, is that I know there's the law, the security also has to follow. But then there's the real situations that the one security guard has a lot of decision power and a lot of challenge to navigate. What does it look like, the everyday decisions about how to police people or how to behave in the job? What does it actually look like in the micro level? I was really interested in the everyday, what are the little decisions this person makes with the tools they have? And how can you do the job like ethically or well, or try to be like good at it? I mean, that was really my attempt. In my previous work, I had been kind of interested in these spaces that are semi-public somehow, like shopping malls, where there is private security. There's also interest from the other people who work there to, you know, keep it as a consumer space. And this is not like something that is obvious to you necessarily, but you just somehow sense it and people start behaving differently when they enter these areas because you know it's being like surveilled and you know people expect certain kind of behavior. Security, I think for me, the most interesting thing is that, for example, in Finland, I think we have 65,000 people who hold the licenses like I do to do this work. When you do the work, you're allowed to infringe basic rights. You can use force. you make like big decisions about other people's freedom of movement and physical independence or safety. And then we have like maybe 7,000 police in Finland. So, I mean, not all these people are at work at the same time. Like, I also have the licenses now and I haven't been working since this project, but it just is something that is present in a lot of public space.
You said that you were interested in the small personal decisions that people have to take. You yourself had to take these decisions too. And also in the book where you write down your dilemmas you were in. And how was it to be in two roles as an artist, but also as a security guard? How much could you focus on one or the other during the process of being employed?
Yeah, it was quite challenging, which I kind of expected also. And for me, it was primarily as a human. You know, I went there, I'm an artist, but I didn't record anything. I wasn't doing a specific thing. I just wanted to see what the work is like and be good at it in the sense that I can sleep my nights and feel okay. So manage the work in my own standards. Then, of course, as the education is very short, when you start, you're very dependent on your colleagues because you know basically the legal framework around this work and that's it. And then you just, yeah, you learn it as you do it. I was just keeping a diary. So I did make notes during my day at work. If something happened, like I didn't try to like process things too much. Obviously, like I had to keep learning the job. So I did process like, where is that? Where is this? We're doing this. And of course, I tried to remain somewhat critical to like, why are we doing this and ask questions about it. But often what happened was that I just went home and I like wrote down everything. I actually had my assistant and I talked to them on the phone and they wrote down everything. And that was also a part of like offloading, like having a witness to the work I was doing. But basically I kept this diary that then in the book, there's like excerpts, like very short things. But I just wrote down everything that happened also in order not to forget because so many things happen. And then sometimes only afterwards you go like, what was this actually? So the role as an artist was more something that I had decided to delay.
Was it easy to get the job? Like, were there some difficulties when you applied, then you got the training? Did you tell anyone it was a project?
I didn't just go and apply for the job, but I would have gotten the job easily. They have huge lack of workforce and they do like someone who is middle-aged, who has like some life experience. I mean, I broke the record in the guard course school because I was so like, I was just overachieving my like, I would have gotten the job, but for the reason, because they can also use Google and they can read from the newspaper like, oh, I'm representing Finland in Venice. So what I did, I went to Securitas. I had a connection there. So through this person, I asked like, hey, can you like facilitate somehow? Then I met the CAO and I said like, hey, I'm an artist, and I want to do this work to know what it's like. And then I do some art later. And he's like, what art? I'm like, I don't know yet. So the contract was employee-employer. Yeah, but it wouldn't be easy to get the job. But just with my like profile on the internet, I know that there would be questions anyway. Yeah. So it was better to be open about it.
And the colleagues didn't know, right?
Yeah, I didn't tell my colleagues. I mean, it was something I was like, it would be nice to tell them. On the other hand, like, what will I tell them? Like, oh, I'm actually an artist. I'm here kind of a project, but actually I'm just normally working here. Like, it's like, what is the story? And then the people at Securitas was like, why would you, they didn't want to tell them because they're like, it's, you work here, you have a contract, you're going to do the work. So, you know, nobody's business. And also I felt I really want to be taught the, you know, because the teaching, the learning happens in the job. I want people to do it to me as I would be like a, and then I thought in like 3 days, they will also go to Google and, or they will see the newspaper or something.
In a way, you had phase one is research, then phase two, you start working there as a security guard, do your job, you keep notes, but you don't actually work as an artist. Then there's the third part, which you tell your colleagues that you are an artist, that you have this project and that you want to continue working on this topic. And if they're ready to participate in a workshop that you're organizing. And that's one of the, or the main piece of the exhibition, you interacting with your colleagues in training situations. So the people playing Securitas are security guards, but the people you're interacting with, they are
actors. So, like, I initiated this or invited my colleagues to participate in this forum theater workshop. So it's a participatory theater method that's very widely used in different contexts. How it functions is there's someone who's kind of leading the workshop, and I found someone who had a lot of experience and working with like prison guards before and so on, had like an understanding of different kind of people. There's different formats, but what seems the most effective is that you have like these actors who are also trained in the method. So it's not just any actors, and they present the scene, and then the participants, me and my actual colleagues, step into the scene and try different approaches. So it's this kind of like drama workshop method where you have actors, but they're also, yeah, trained in the specific method.
And how is this workshop different from a training? Was it similar to situations that you had in the Securitas training?
It would be amazing if they had that kind of training. The problem with the training is it's very short. You're really learning the basics. Like, friend is standing there and then you're putting on the handcuff. Like, that, there's no time for this kind of training. Yeah, so this was very different from what my colleagues had experienced. Basically, for me as a guard, I tried to speak about these issues, but it didn't go anywhere. So then I was like, there needs to be something where we can somehow develop something. And then, of course, it's just resources. Like, we sat there 3 days. I hired these actors. You know, we could have had more participants, of course. It was very exclusive. But, like, it's also like an art method. I mean, it's participatory theater, but, like, you need these skills from people to do this. So I felt that that would be useful and interesting and something also for me that I wanted to kind of go through as a participant.
How did you cast the colleagues that participated?
There was a step that happened in between, which was that I invited a lot of different type of colleagues for an anonymous interview. And then, because I know people are quite sensitive, so I offered this very kind of safe format. Like, I might use the content, but it's anonymous and not the recording or anything. And then already here was some selection in terms of that some colleagues just decided that they don't want to participate. So the people who were interested, especially, I felt like if I had a good relationship to this person, they thought, you know, I'm okay, I get it. And then after the interview, they also had a better idea of what I'm interested in. So then I did some tiny selection in terms of if somebody felt really that they are afraid to speak, then I was like, it's not going to work in the workshop. So I invited those people, but it was narrowed down from who said yes to interview, who seemed like they're super open. Then somebody who I asked switched workplaces. So, and also I had a limitation in terms of what is possible technically.
We move on to the book, so we can also have Vela included in the discussion. So we have these different phases. Then there's the Venice Biennale, and there is this catalog, which is part of the exhibition. And not as a common exhibition catalog, but really works more like a reader or an extended caption. Yeah, Vela and you, I think you met during your studies in Holland. Was it the first project that you were working together, or?
It was the first one that we worked together. We were living around the same time in Holland, and also with the curator, Christina Lee, who was also there around that time. This was also the time when I first saw a project of Pilvi. And this one project that I saw from Pilvi, it was called The Trainee, and it has some similar approaches. You, Pilvi, you had a question in terms of what it's like to be a trainee, but also wasting time within a company, being hired by a company. And we, as a viewer, we got to see a footage, like a video that you made out of the situation. And this was a work that I've never forgotten. It was a performative act that you go in an environment and you work with the given material that you gather within that environment somehow in a documenting way, but then also not, because you are the editor eventually and you select the situations that you want to point out. So it's very close to documentation, but then also it has this fictive narrative in it that I get to see eventually.
Was it clear from the beginning you didn't want to make an illustration of the exhibition?
Mm. Yeah, it was always with first me and Christina, were discussing whether we should make a publication, and if we make one, what is the purpose? But it was quite clear from early on, because of how I work, that there will be a lot of material that is produced in the process, that it would be beneficial to kind of support the work. But I don't know how far I was when we first talked to Vela, but we basically had decided it's kind of more about the background than install shots and make a catalog.
So you were very far with material that you have gathered already. The question for me was always how to work with this sort of material that you're gathering, which is a very realistic documenting way, but still have this abstraction in it, because there is this translation that you are doing from like this documentation work into an actual artwork. So how do I work as well with, as a designer, with this translation from like material that is documenting into a book that is an abstraction of it?
When we spoke to Vela, what I really liked was a very conceptual approach, because it feels messy, like there's so much.
Sure.
You know, when you do this kind of research, there's one zillion facts that are interesting. But then how to get it sharp.
Yeah, I felt the same. I mean, I know Vela also from the time in Holland. I also studied there, and I took the book and 5 seconds later I knew, okay, it has like this really straightforward Dutch touch to it in a way. I think that also feeds this feeling of not knowing, okay, is it like a straight documentation or is it fiction? In a way, I think that's the playful part of works like that, but sometimes also probably leave some people a bit on their own. And is that something that you want, that you don't give answers?
I guess there's the problem with the truth, like, you know, or documentation. It's always a narrative, but I'm trying to tell the truth or tell what is interesting about the truth that I find. So I really like, I identify like with kind of documentary or this kind of area of production. But then I really like involve. So it's about like me going somewhere, experiencing something. I'm a person, you know, I see something, I miss something else. This is, and also like when you have things that are documentation, like the text messages in the piece, for example, obviously it's not the entire text message. It's edited shorter. Okay, it's translated in English. And this is what is done in normal documentaries as well. Like you always try to deliver something that the viewer can like understand what's happening. You have to construct the narrative.
And my task as a designer is to find and formulate an interest from a visual and content-based perspective, and then also find something that Billy and the curator Christina Lee and I agree that we see a necessity in showing. So in a way, as a designer, I develop an idea or an interest next to Bilvi's work, and I don't interfere with Bilvi's work at all. It's rather I try to formulate the point of view from my perspective, which in this case was like a more maybe complex situation that I usually work with when it's only about making a book together with the artist and with an editor, because this time it was also about shaping an identity for a pavilion in the Venice Biennial. So there are different aspects into making decisions in what is important, the elements, what are the elements that I can actually work with, etc. So I often ask questions. So I ask Bilvi questions, how she proceeds, just the way you're doing now in this podcast. So I'm also asking questions in terms of the material that Bilvi is working. And in this case, since it's this company, that this topic of being a company and having also being almost this institution dealing so closely with law and ethics at the same time, these are sort of similar questions, I believe, that Bilvi has been asking herself. But then I'm doing it from sort of a little bit more visual kind of perspective, I guess. So I remember that I just like was just Googling, of course, also the company. And once you Google the company, you see that Securitas has this immense identity itself. It has a website. On this website, they explain a lot about their ethics, about their way of handling politics. It's also about working methods and what they expect from a worker or what their place is in society. So they also have a branding portal. And in this branding portal, then it becomes very clear. They're very strategic about a lot of things. It's the first company that I've ever witnessed to like share their identity online. It's called branding in their vocabulary. And that alone, I thought, was very interesting, and that triggered me to work with as well. They showed three parts which was important for them, the imagery, like how to deal with images and what the representation is of the company through images. It was really quite detailed. And then it was also about typography, how, what font they would use. And then also it really went down into details how the layout would be built and what the elements were that they were using. And within these categories, they would specifying how, like in photography, what the photographs would show. And it was also, there were also, again, three parts in photography, technical parts, that wide angle would be important. So you would see the entire environment where Securitas was active. Then it would be showing details, that they would pay attention onto details. And then there was also this aspect of showing a human in the image, so that they would communicate it is a human interest in the company. So that's why I thought it would be good, a good base to start with, like their branding elements, and to just use it as well and use them freely in the identity that I was then starting to build, which took place also in the, like, so in the visual communication for the pavilion itself and also in the book, which was part of it.
Yeah. So in a way, it was an appropriation of their guidelines and then enhancing them for all those different things as the book and the exhibition and the website that you also did.
My position, in a way, I'm not one to judge either their position, nor it's something that I know that I'm going to take material as serious as I can that Bilvi has produced in this position. So I'm also going to take the branding as serious as I can within from a graphic design point of view, in a way. But I'm also pointing out that this exists. So it's rather I'm showing what we are dealing with. I'm not going to be opinionated about this. But then also what sort of a little bit parallel and had nothing to do with the company, but with the process itself of Bilvi, was the fact that we couldn't use the images one-on-ones, that the images that you took, Bilvi, while working there, it had to have an abstraction in it. So that was the moment when we started using a blur effect.
I said I didn't record, but I did take those like five pictures in my workplace.
That's the ones with the changing room, for example.
Yeah. And then I took the photo of my badge when I got it, which is like a bit blurry, that we used in the cover.
I mean, this is sort of footage that is really also amazing. It's not staged and it's just very realistic, and it's, you know, there is no abstraction yet, but once you just show it on the cover, this image, it becomes this abstraction itself, because it's not a staged photo, it's real.
Yeah, totally. I think it gives really this power and this directness of a documentary photograph, which is has a quality that is not in the image, but in the moment that it's been taken. So I think this really straightforward cover really helps to say, okay, it's real, and then you start reading.
It's also real because you see a little bit of thumb in the picture, which is the real hand.
Exactly, the supersized thumb. Okay, so we have the research, the job, the artistic practice, the exhibition, the book. So at the end, we have the reception. Was there any strong opinionated reaction from the public, or was there problems with Securitas, like on the legal matter? Or
so for me, it was like a power position. So I could go to Securitas like, hey, I'm important, I represent Finland, I also have my own budget, so I don't need your money, you know, to make my films, which would be a totally different story. And also when I make something, everybody's gonna see it. So for me, I was like, hey, I hold like a position of power, I'm going to exploit it like in this negotiation, that I can talk to this company and they will respect me. I mean, I don't know what fits so good, like security and this very like nationalist idea, like represent our country somewhere. What was interesting to me was the negotiation with Securitas in general. Like, you know, I needed the access while I needed them to also respect my artistic process. And then I also wanted to make sure that they don't get early kind of worried that what it's going to be and try to shut everything down. And so there was a lot of like careful negotiation, and the book was one side of negotiation, because one step was I did the workshops. They knew that I do workshops. They knew the themes, but they didn't know what it's like. I didn't know if I'm going to use the footage. When I decided I want to use the footage, when my participants, then I kind of said to Securitas, like, hey, now I know what the art will be. So there was a moment of looking at what's in the videos and being like, oh, it's not like according to our guidelines, whatever. But that was kind of sorted. And then the next place where we had to decide what can be public, I mean, obviously we covered my social security number or taken it out, but things like that, that I don't want to publish. But then what I wanted to publish was these radio codes that they're like shorthand codes for different things that we use in the field. This document is like a secret classified document. Like I got it at the job. I could have probably published it. What I wanted to do is to show the words that there is a code for, not to show the codes. But then, of course, there was quite some problematic things there. There were like some ethnicities, not all. There were some like wordings that were really like not good about like a drunk person or like a drug addict. There was a kind of word like junkie or something like this. It's not like a very nice document to be in the public. This was just because during my time, there were so many issues and problems to talk about. This wasn't even to me on the top of priority. But then actually like in the moment when I was like, hey, I need to actually ask, can I show this? And then obviously the answer is like, no. And then I was like, yeah, these things are quite problematic. Maybe you shouldn't have this kind of course. Like, what we did and ended up having to do was to actually cover the words and leave the codes. And then we made an entry to the glossary that is also one part in the book where we have different words explained that said like they're problematic terms, they're like ethnicities named, but Securitas is in the process of changing them. And there's also like non-discrimination office in Finland has like looked through this and recommended that they change it, and yeah, they have been changed. And to me, I mean, I did comply. Like, I didn't publish the words. I could have, but I felt like the value of publishing them is not as big as, like, it needs context. And there's a big risk of misunderstanding and a big, like, scandal when people misunderstand how these are used and so on. So I thought it's better to put in this, like, we are changing them, and then bring it up again, like, publicly in discussion and so on in this.
What I specifically liked now with this case, with Pilvi's case, that your project is not taking place in an art context. It's not specifically placeable in the museum, in an institution, not in a gallery either. But it's also being picked up by politicians and by people that are interested in this topic generally, and or philosophers, or it has a much broader platform to be talked about. And this I really appreciate, because it's a rare situation, I think, where an art project leads into conversations with other professions and reaches out to an audience that is not necessarily involved in art production as much as we are.
Also, I wanted to add to that, when I showed it the beginning of this year in Finland, and it coincided with big scandals of use of force in security, and also like somebody died in a mall and so on. When these things happened, even before my show, so then the media called me and asked, like, what do you think? So then you suddenly become this, even if as an artist, you become like an expert or someone who they should ask also, like, what do you think is going on here and so on. This, I really appreciate that conversation actually goes to the actual issues also, and the project is part of that.
Ja, ich fand es interessant zu hören, wie die Herangehensweise sowohl bei der Künstlerin als auch bei der Gestalterin sehr ähnlich waren. Dieser Move für die Gestaltung, die CI der Securitas zu verwenden, ist ja eigentlich genau dieselbe Technik, wie Pilvi Takala für ihre Intervention auch gewählt hat. Eine Art Tarnung, der Wolf im Schafspelz. Über diese Referenzen schwingt dann automatisch das Strenge und Bürokratische mit, was die Securitas hat. Und man hat am Ende dann tatsächlich eine Dokumentmappe in der Hand, in der das Material aus dem Prozess gesammelt wird. Und ich glaube, diese Einfachheit tut diesem komplexen Konstrukt auch ziemlich gut.
Da stimme ich dir bei. Was mir sehr gefällt, ist die Idee, dass Pilvi Takala an der Weltkunstausstellung der renommierten Biennale, in der KünstlerInnen ihre Länder vertreten, dass es ihr gelingt, ihr Land über das Aufzeigen von sozialen Strukturen und damit verbundenen Machtstrukturen zu repräsentieren, dass sie eigentlich diese Umkehrung macht und das Ganze durch die ganz einfache Handlung, einen Job anzunehmen.
Ja, sie verwendet halt wirklich diese Macht, die sie erhalten hat, durch ihre Position und durch ihre Wahl, um eines ihrer Interessen ans Tageslicht zu bringen und der Welt zu erzählen. Ja, Laura, wir kommen langsam zum Ende dieser Episode. Eine Stimme, die uns noch fehlt, die wir aber immer dabei haben, ist die Stimme der Jury. Und hören wir uns mal an, was sie zu Close Watch formuliert hat.
Pilvi Takala, Close Watch. Ein dünner Kunstkatalog im typischen Format der Faldon-Monographien ist vom bürokratischen Erscheinungsbild einer privaten Sicherheitsfirma geprägt, mit der sich die künstlerische Arbeit auseinandersetzt. Die Finnin Pilvi Takala ließ sich für ein halbes Jahr im Sicherheitsteam einer Shopping Mall anstellen und verarbeitete ihre Erfahrungen zu einer Videoinstallation für die Biennale Venedig. Das Buch mit Schweizer Broschur wirkt wie ein Stapel von Dokumenten in einer Kartonmappe. Formulare, Briefe, Honorarabrechnungen, Feldnotizen der Künstlerin sowie zahlreiche randabfallende Nahaufnahmen von Arbeitsräumen und Gesprächen zwischen Teammitgliedern in grau-blauen Uniformen. Alle Texte erscheinen in einheitlicher Schrift und Größe, meist in einem dreispaltigen Layout, während die Dokumente faksimiliert und manchmal auch transkribiert wurden. Alles wirkt stoisch, bisweilen sogar kalt, und es ist eine mutige Gestaltungsentscheidung, dies so zu belassen. Die Ästhetik institutionalisierter Gewalt und ihre performativen Dimensionen kommen sehr anschaulich zum Ausdruck. Die ruhige Behandlung hilft, dass das Thema ernst genommen und zugänglich gemacht wird, gerade auch angesichts bisweilen geschilderter Szenen von Gewaltsmissbrauch.
Nach dem Jurybericht ist es wie immer Zeit für den Blick ins Archiv.
Genau, auch dieses Mal haben wir drei Bücher rausgepickt. Eines ist schon etwas älter, bei den schönsten Schweizer Büchern 2005 wurde der Titel Temporary Discomfort ausgezeichnet. Der Schweizer Fotograf Jules Spinach hat darin eingefangen, wie sich das Bergdorf Davos während dem jährlich abgehaltenen World Economic Forum zum Schutz der hohen Gäste in eine Hochsicherheitsburg verwandelt. Die Publikation kam bei Lars Müller raus und wurde von Winfried Heiniger gestaltet.
Und das zweite Buch wurde 2009 ausgezeichnet, die demokratische Fassung von der Selbstbestimmung der Menschen in den notwendigen Ordnungen des Zusammenlebens von Jürg Paul Müller, wurde eine theoretische Abhandlung ausgezeichnet. Dies erschien bei NZZ Libro und diskutiert die drei Themen von Verfassung, Demokratie und Menschenrechte.
Und zum Abschluss eine Publikation, die 2021 ausgezeichnet wurde, State Fiction. Es ist das Resultat einer künstlerischen Recherche von Denis Bertschi, die sich mit der Rolle und dem Selbstverständnis der Schweizer Mission in der neutralen Zone zwischen Nord- und Südkorea befasst hat.
Die Details und Links zu den erwähnten Büchern und zu unseren GästInnen findet ihr in den Shownotes auf der Plattform eures Vertrauens oder auf nichtnurschön.ch.
Ja, Laura, das ist das Ende. Wir durften 6 Bücher der schönsten Schweizer Bücher 2022 besprechen. Die gute Nachricht ist, dass es weitergeht. Diesmal mit der Auswahl 2023 und ich freue mich schon darauf, diese Bücher zu entdecken.
Ich freue mich auch und bin sehr gespannt, was in der Auswahl dabei sein wird.
Bis bald.
Bis bald.